the Easter Sunday at the Prudential Auditorium, my group and McCoy Tyner's group. Personally, I feel I'm looking forward to a very unusual concert in view of the fact that in May 1970, McCoy Tyner, his group, and my group, we gave a concert at Town Hall in New York. And Earl Wilson reviewed the concert. He was a very staunch critic, as you know. And he gave us a very favorable write-up. He said it was a very unusual concert. And I agree with him for one reason, that it wasn't like the ordinary concert when you have one or more group. For example, it's not like one group comes out and plays, they finish, and then the other comes. We correlated our forces, in a sense. Sometimes there would only be one man on the stage playing. At times, there would be only two. And the groups would be intermingled. In other words, that element of unexpectancy was there consistently. At one point, the concert reached a pitch where Kumba, he did a dance, I mean, it was spontaneous, and it was fantastic. And it just knocked me out. It was a very unusual concert. I enjoyed it, I believe, more than any concert I've ever played because of the aesthetic forces that were there. And I expect, I'm looking forward to the same kind of artistry this coming Sunday at the Prudential Auditorium. Incidentally, that concert was called The Spirit of Love, which had a type of philosophy underlying the concert. In other words, there was more to it than just a concert. There was the idea of brotherhood, of joining forces aesthetically to present the maximum in the artistic output.
You be bringing all your reeds with you and woodwinds?
Yes, most of them. In fact, I have a new flute that I plan to introduce at this concert. It's a Nigerian flute. It was made in Nigeria. It's indigenous of Nigeria.
You're one of the earliest jazz musicians to use flute in jazz, weren't you?
Well, with no offense, I don't look at myself as a jazz musician. I'm just simply a musician. The term jazz being highly ambiguous.
Yeah. Sort of doesn't include everything that you play either.
It certainly doesn't. I don't know if it includes anything that I play. Sam Most played flute before I did. You remember Sam Most?
No.
Oh, yes. He was playing flute. In fact, Frank West played flute back in the 40s when he was with the Billy Eckstein Orchestra. But I suppose it became popular more or less in the early 50s. I started playing in the 50s. But there are several people who preceded me playing the flute in improvised music.
You're one of the early people to bring Eastern sounds.
Well, they have attributed that to me also. I suppose I'm partially responsible for that. Although I know Abdul Malik presented the oud around the same time that I was delving into instruments from the East, such as the argul and the shanai. I think he did an album called East Meets West where he played the oud, which I think is a Syrian Arabian instrument. This kind of extrapolation that is introducing instruments from other lands into the American music is a unique kind of synthesis. Do you enjoy the, some of the things I've done with the Chennai?
Well, the first album of yours I heard was Sounds of Yusuf.
And I used Argul on that.
Yeah, Argul, balloons, 7-Up bottles.
Yeah, element of humor and sincerity.
Yeah. Even one of the cuts was called Love and Humor.
Right, right. You know, I still get requests for that, especially in Los Angeles. They love that number, and I haven't played that in a long time.
It has an element of timelessness about it.
Apparently it does. Another number that they request out there, I have to play it every set, sometimes twice, is the love theme from Spartacus, which is a beautiful song in L.A. We recently did, a couple of weeks ago, we did an album, which won't be released around December. And I have some more elements of surprise for the listeners. I don't want to talk about it too much, otherwise I'll give it away. So it should be out around December on Atlantic. Introduce some, I like to call it evolution, aesthetic evolution.
How's your recent album doing?
Oh, the recent one, it's doing well, Hush and Thunder. It's doing very good. I've got some very good reviews on it from different parts of the country, even up in Rochester, California. Some very nice reviews on it. It's doing well. Kenneth Barron is quite a writer. You know, he's responsible for a lot of the material on that album. I like to mention Kenneth, you know, that he's with the group and he'll be appearing Sunday with us, along with Albert Kumba Heath on drums, and Bob Cunningham bass. And we all share the idea that we're very fortunate that we have this group such as it is, and that we have such an artistic rapport and respect for each other, and it's reflected in the music. And we allude to the technical aspects as well as the spiritual involvement in music. Mm-hmm. And I also like to mention that we are publishing a book. It's being prepared now. It's called Writings by the Yusuf Lateef Quartet, Something Else, meaning that we're doing something else other than music. And it's a book of stories. Kenneth wrote a very beautiful story called Sweet October. There are plays, there are poems. I've written one article on Charlie Parker called The Constitution of Aesthetics and the Declaration of Genius. I wrote another philosophical type writing called Reflection, and another essay called An Essay on Nothing. And it's a thrust to present to the world, you know, that we do other things other than play music, in that we're not one-sided in our endeavors to contribute to the world of culture. And it should be available at the end of May.
Who are some of the composers and musicians who have influenced your own work?
Oh, many composers and players.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, many, many have influenced me, and it seems to be ceaseless. From the beginning, one of the beginning influences was a trumpet player you perhaps never heard of. His name is Buddy Bell. When I was 12 years old, I used to live upstairs over a theater in Detroit, Michigan. It's called Arcady Theater, and they had stage shows there on the weekends. And I would sit right in the front, and they had a little small band. It was a tenor saxophonist and a trumpet player, Buddy Bell, and they would play for the entertainers, the dancers. And Buddy, he impressed me with the way he sounded. He was always clean. He had on like shirt and tie, and he was seemed to be immaculate. And he carried himself in such a dignified way. I was impressed with the way he appeared and the way he sounded. And I wanted to play trumpet due to that impression. And I asked my father for trumpet. And he didn't want me to play trumpet because he said it would make a bump on your lip, you know, that corn the trumpet players get. Uh-huh. So I was determined to play music. So I said, okay, Dad, let me have a saxophone, you know. It was my second choice. And so he told me if I would get half of the money, that he would get the other half. So I found a saxophone downtown for $80 at the Ivan C.K. Music Store in Detroit. So I sold papers, and I got $40, and my dad gave me the other $40, and I bought the saxophone. Finally, I was 18 before I got the saxophone, and I was in high school. And so that was one of the first influences. And then I started playing the saxophone in 38. And in 39, the fellows at school would go to hear the large bands that were very popular at that time. And there was a place called the Greystone Ballroom in Detroit. The Greystone, incidentally, is owned, I think, by the Motown. At least it was the last time I heard. Well, every week there'd be a different band there, a large band, like Cab Calloway would be there. And, of course, I would go to hear the tenor player and that I was interested in the tenor saxophone. And with Cab Calloway was Shoeberry. You remember Shoeberry?
Yeah.
Well, he was a big, he was quite plump, you know. And he was famous for a song called I Don't Stand a Ghost of a Chance with You. And then Count Basie, of course you know Count Basie.
Yeah.
Lester Young was with that band, one of the great stylists, one of the great influences. The whole school of saxophone playing came from the influences of Lester Young. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah.
I could name a few. And also Herschel Evans was with that band. He was from Texas and had a unique style. And one man who influenced me very much was with Andy Kirk's band. His name was Dick Wilson. He didn't have what is referred to as a big sound, but he had such a pure sound. It was such a beautiful sound. And it was unique again. He didn't sound like anyone else. This is one thing that I reflect back on in, say, the 30s and the 40s, the musicians had unique sounds. They didn't sound like each other. I often wonder why that was. But nevertheless, people took pride in being individuals. And so it was a treat to go hear the different bands and see. Finally, Don Byas came through with Andy Kirk, and there was Dick Wilson and Andy Kirk. And Dick Wilson and Don Byas. And then with, let's see, who was that? Bud Johnson was with Earl Hines. Then finally, Billy Eckstein formed a band with Gene Ammons. He was influenced. Dexter Gordon, Sonny Stitt, Leo Parker. Oh, yeah, King Kolax, who is from, you know King Kolax? He's
yeah.
from Chicago. In Detroit, there was a place called the Bank Bar. It used to be a bank. And the fellows were saying there's a band down there from Chicago with two tenor players. One is named Gene Ammons, another's named Lank Keys. So you got to hear him. This is with King Colax's band. So I walked in the bank bar that night to hear King Colax, and Gene Ammons was standing on top of the piano playing. And he was definitely an influence. And I was so taken in until I said, if that kind of music comes out of Chicago, I must go to Chicago. So I came to Chicago in 46, and I stayed here 2 years. Of course, Coleman Hawkins was a great influence, one of the first intellectual saxophone players. I guess I could go on and on.
And, how did you finally get into the flute and oboe?
Well, that happened. I was playing with Kenny Burrell in Detroit. I think that was in 54. I was only playing saxophone at that time. And he said, Yusuf, why don't you play the flute? And I had simply never thought of playing the flute. So I took him up on it, and I went downtown and bought a flute, I think, the next week. And I've been studying it ever since. Of course, I guess that kicked me off to studying the oboe, because the oboe came next. And I've studied the oboe and the flute because of the fascination of the timbre, the sound of the instrument. And I feel that through being able to play all of them, I can enhance my music. That is the tonal canvas of the music. And that's another reason why I've looked into some of the Eastern instruments, like the argu and the shanai, as a means of enhancing my musical projection.
Do any writing for orchestras?
Yes.
Sweet 16 was sort of.
Yes, I think that was the first orchestral piece that I did. It was recorded with the Cologne Radio Orchestra. But since then, I was commissioned to write a piece for the Symphony of the New World. I composed a suite for them, and it was performed at the Philharmonic this past February 4th. It's called Construct. It was in three movements. And I certainly enjoyed that performance. Such a wonderful orchestra. And they played with such a conviction. They played the piece with such conviction. It's overwhelmed me. I'm looking forward to writing more orchestral pieces and performing them also.
You enjoy classical music?